It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. How are you today?
Another fine day in the world, you know?
Sure.
Why not?
As I mentioned on the way over here, I kind of mailed it in already. I'd be a bit tired.
Oh, come on, wake up. Get some of that coffee, John.
I've tried coffee. A late night, early morning does not bode Johnny well.
Well, we should have made, some of that Highlander grog today.
I know, we need to stop by there. One, I think our mugs are in, so we can drop those off for the listeners to stop by the chef shop.
I'm told they are in, so we can get those over there.
Good, because I also have to take the other batch over for our charity golf outing on Saturday, which will be canceled because of the storms.
Yeah, well, we can keep our fingers crossed, you know. If you want to go out and chase a little white ball around, that's okay.
I got to get one that floats.
They don't.
I know. If they did, I would be better.
Yeah, you'd have a lot more.
I wouldn't lose as many, that's for sure.
Yeah, you'd have a lot more of those. Oh, never mind.
What do we have today? Today is our last episode for investing, as April was our investing month. And I thought a nice way to wrap it up will be a cheat sheet that I found, Investing for Dummies.
I love it. It's
great.
Which
has 20 little nuggets of wonderful information that we can share with our listeners today.
20 rules for successful investing. You know, if everyone followed every one of these rules, we'd be out of business.
Did you know that money talks?
Money does talk.
Yeah, to me it always just says goodbye.
Yeah.
Four kids, it just says goodbye.
Hello.
All right, well is this thing on? So anyway, that was my sad attempt at a joke for today.
Got it. That was pretty sad.
Yeah, well.
Thanks to the Chef Shop for continuing to underwrite the show.
And, not after that. That exchange. They're done.
Yeah, well, Nancy and Scott have been very supportive for darn near a year now, coming up on a year here pretty shortly. And we do appreciate it. They have a great shop. If you haven't been in there, you're missing the boat. Springtime is a great time to go in, you know, sample some popcorn. You've got that special person, and, especially with Mother's Day coming up, you know, of course, everybody's always on a diet, so you can get the diet popcorn when you go in there. I'm going to suggest that they start that.
Are you making that up?
I'm making that up.
Okay.
But it's a good idea, so I'll mention that to Nancy next time I see her. We need a little diet popcorn we can share with Mom on Mother's Day.
Well, I know they have a product now, because my wife raves about it. I took a bite of it and it wasn't popcorn, but it's called Skinny Pop.
I've seen that.
And they just took out all the flavor. That's the only thing that makes it skinny.
Yeah, it actually consists of nothing.
It's a bag of air.
It's a bag of air that
so
you
this is how the show is going to be today, folks.
No calories
involved. I mailed it in. It sounds like Larry's mailing it in. We're done.
It's been a tough week.
Have a good week.
It's got to only get better, because you reach a point, it can't get any worse.
Speaking of getting better.
Yep.
In the market is just
going bizarre.
Bizarre is just going bonkers. And I don't know whether to be nervous or...
You're always nervous, Jan.
I know, but I mean, exceptionally nervous or just exuberant, because now let's hope that the tax, I don't think he'll get it from 35% down to 10 or 15, whatever crazy number that he wants to take the corporate tax rate down to.
I'm kind of liking it, though.
Let's say he even gets it down to 20 or 25.
It's huge.
That's a huge tax cut. Then you add you know, that's money that the companies can then use to either pay employees more, but it's something that could be used to stimulate the economy. I don't know what he's going to do on the personal side as far as tax cuts, but he's talked about, you know, bringing those rates down as well. So are we on the cusp of a really strong bull market, or is all this going to flop and everything that has been priced in, this thing's going to come crashing down? Your opinion, putting you in a spot now, go.
Well,
let me clear my throat.
I don't know. I'm very hopeful that things will continue on. As we say, there's never a bad time to invest. And although we are at record highs again, and we keep saying that again and again and again, it's still not a bad time to get in, because a lot of the characteristics, the companies are cash heavy. Some of the reports coming out, we talked about the indices the last week, which again they represent a number to look at, but you have to understand inside the numbers that a small movement or a large movement in just a couple of companies can have a huge impact. So you have to look at the overall market, or go back to some of the Russell indexes, which are probably more representative of the actual market itself overall. But I'm very positive with what's going on. My caveats to clients for 20 plus years have always been, barring any, you know, catastrophic world event, which certainly we could have.
We don't have anything going on.
You know, with North Korea, with Iraq, Iran, and it's just, you know, those things can happen. And history has shown when they do, there is a blip, but usually 3 to 6, 9 months later, the market's back because the fundamentals are good. So,
as we talked about in last week's show, too, if we have a nuclear war, we got other issues to worry about than our investments.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm very positive. You know, reducing the taxes on corporations is paramount to changing the perception of many businesses on the economy, because, you know, we work hard every day to make our businesses go, to support our employees, to pay benefits, to do all the things that a business owner tries to do. And at the end of the day, then you write this huge check to whether it's federal government or state government. For what? Because, you know, it's gone way beyond providing the basics of protection and infrastructure and whatnot. You know, we're just trying to do too many things with too many people, you know, using everybody else's money. And that's just what I'm going to say about that today.
Yeah, and what I like is, this week especially, and towards the end of last week, the run up has been been more reactionary than forward looking, whereas it's all based on earnings. The Dow, the Nasdaq, all the different indices are up, and they're up because companies are surprising the analysts with earnings reports that they just weren't expecting, and the majority of them are to the positive. I mean, it's just across the board. So, I mean, that's what I like to see. I like to see the market go up because of fundamental reasons as opposed to speculative nature. I think, you know, the tax reform was priced in a while ago before all this hit. But again, like you mentioned and we have talked about before, whenever you have all-time highs, you know, I start getting a little twitchy, a little nervous. We will obviously on a weekly basis keep you updated as to what's going on, but if in case you missed it, yeah, the Nasdaq crossed 6,000, the Dow is back up above 2,100, and the S&P is up, so it's that part of it's good, and let's enjoy it while it's here and hope that the administration can come through with their promises. So that is the In the Market segment. Come and gone.
Come and gone.
So the
stay tuned next week, and we'll see what's going on by then.
Yes. So April was investment month. We talked about indices. We talked about, you know, proper diversification, coming back to the financial plan. We talked about what to think, or how, kind of give you a mindset when we have geopolitical risk. We talked about passive investing versus active management.
We did all that in April.
We did all that in April. And we will today we're going to be wrapping it up with this Investment for Dummies cheat sheet, 20 rules for successful investing. I read through these. I thought it would make an interesting wrap up. I can read and Larry can play color commentator, and then I can color commentate on Larry's color commentating.
Say that again three times fast.
No. So, and our topic of the week, as you mentioned, is brought to us by the Chef Shop. And if you're interested in sponsoring the show, please let us know. The website is www.thefinancialcafe.us. Larry's contact information is out there. My contact information is out there. Let us know if you have an interest. It's very affordable. And without that, let's jump in here. Rule number one. Let's start back. Start at rule 20 and work our way. Your personal life and health are the highest return, lowest risk investments. They're far important, more important than the size of your financial portfolio. I agree.
A lot of truth to that.
I have never seen a U-Haul follow a funeral procession.
Very true.
You cannot take it with you.
Cannot take it with you.
I've never seen that. The Egyptians tried it, and we ended up just stealing it back anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's a good point. I mean, without health and being a type 1 diabetic, I know how, you know, when you're not feeling well, just how miserable that is. And I think a lot of us take that for granted, our health for granted. And, you know, we got to prioritize. Yes, it's important to save. It's important to plan. But at the end of the day, is that what's really most important?
It is about priorities. And unfortunately, we are in a world of stuff. People are very concerned about how much stuff they get, how much stuff they have.
If my listeners out there are George Carlin fans, you're laughing with me right now because he did a whole spiel on stuff that was absolutely hilarious.
Stuff that we acquire, you can't take it with you. And it's about priorities. And as John said, everyone has their own trials and tribulations, either personally or in a family setting that we go through. And you can't worry about the unknown, about the future. You'll worry yourself to death. But it sometimes, you know, just comes up and smacks you in the face. You know, back around March 1, when I went to bed on Friday night, I was feeling perfectly well and got up Saturday morning and couldn't put any weight on my one foot. And, you know, they still aren't sure what it was. They think
Your wife was mad at you.
She hit me with a hammer. No, not really. But, you know, you wake up and you go, I wish I felt like I did last night because it was a lot better than today.
I want a do-over.
And a couple of weeks later, it got under control and kind of semi back to normal again, although a little cautious. But it puts a new perspective on your personal life and your health and just putting everything in perspective because, you know, it doesn't matter how many toys or how much money you have. If you can't enjoy them. That's my comment on point number 20.
And a little cliche also for those who are workaholics out there, your inbox will never be empty.
That is true.
So number 19, you are what you read and listen to. So we have some people listening to us are very wise.
They are very wise because they're going to get a stream of comments and information that I guarantee you they're not going to get anywhere else.
Straightforward, keep it simple theory. But don't pollute your mind with bad investing strategies and philosophies. The quality of what you read and listen to is far more important than the quantity. Find out how to evaluate the quality of what you read and hear. There is a lot of truth to that. There are even other radio shows and news stations. They report things, and Larry and I are scratching our heads sometimes because it's flat out wrong. Some of it's flat out silly. If someone says the market's going to go down, you need to get out, or the market's going to go up, you need to get in, and that's their basis. Their market timers, don't believe them. If that was a proven way to invest, there wouldn't be people in jail for it.
exactly true. And it takes me, you know, you listen to all of the rhetoric, and being a mass communications major with a specialty in broadcasting, we were taught by some of the best.
Is that where you got your radio voice from?
That's where it came from, John. Okay. I'm telling you. We were taught by some of the best who, you know, came from countries, Poland, for example. One of our, Camille Winter, one of our instructors, was the head of state broadcasting in Poland before it was overrun by the Germans many, many years ago. And he and his family walked away with nothing but the clothes on their back, came to the U.S., and he was probably one of the best professors that we had about ethics and journalism and, you know, report
ethics and journalism.
The facts. Yeah, ethics and journalism. That wasn't
a case in oxymorons.
That wasn't the name of the course, but back then that's what we practiced, is you reported the facts, you made sure that there was factual information. Now, and it's just, I have to chuckle, Google, they reported yesterday, where else on the radio, that Google is now building an algorithm to try and help determine whether or not when you do a search for a specific topic, that the information that comes up on their website is actually real and not fake news.
Because there's fake news on the internet?
There's over half of what is out there is produced by people who know it has no factual basis, it has no relevance, they make it up mm-hmm. as they go, and it's put out there as real. And so now Google is having to build this algorithm to try and filter out the fake news so that what you get is actually something that is accurate. So determining, I think that's what this speaks to. You know, listen to information that is verifiable, that you feel that you are getting the facts, you're not getting fake news, as it were, and be positive. There's a lot of studies out there that, you know, if you are around positive people, if you exhibit positive influences and communication, then, believe me, guarantee life will be much better than those who walk around with a chip on their shoulder and they're always looking for the negative. So I think that may expand that a little more than they had intended. But, you know, watch what you read, what you listen to. Make sure that it is factual and it is all about the quality and not the quantity of what you're following.
Hire advisors carefully. We actually have pretty early on in our radio program, which we probably, that was probably back in July of 16, we did a show just on the questions to ask your advisor. But hire advisors carefully. I mean, that goes without saying. I mean, your advisor should be able to provide you with credentials. You should be able to verify said credentials. You need to feel comfortable. I mean, it's, you know, just like if you're going to a doctor or, you know, trying to establish that type of relationship, you need to have that trust and you need to make sure that you, your spouse, children, whoever is going to be involved are comfortable with this person.
It has to be a good fit. And not everyone is a good fit for every individual. So, you know, perform the interviews, discuss expectations. You can't make a decision necessarily overnight. But if you are working with someone, give them a little time to actually perform on what they've told you they're going to do. And with the new fiduciary rule, this particular line item says, beware of conflicts of interest when you consider advisors. And that speaks to the fiduciary rule, because if there are any potential conflicts of interest, they have an obligation to disclose those to you fully so that you understand that they may exist and can make a decision as to whether you are willing to accept them or not.
Minimize your trading. There's a lot of truth to this. I mean, if you did the research on the front end with your advisor, and if they are getting paid on a commission basis for trading, you want to keep an eye on that and make sure that they're not what we call churning the account. But if you have your own IRA, and you have it invested and it was a good allocation, as long as those mutual funds or ETFs, whatever you're using, are doing well, there's no reason to be jumping in and out or trading. That one's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, the more you trade, as it says, the more opportunity you have to make mistakes.
True.
Which is a very true statement.
Number 16, I think, ties in with number 18, which was hire advisors carefully. It says, ignore soothsayers and prognosticators. Yes, leave that for the entertainment part if you want to have your palm read, but we don't want to use those people for investing. Number 15 is important, and we see this a lot. We have said many times on the show, any investment decision based on emotion is almost always wrong. Don't bail when things look bleak. Don't do it. Don't bail when things look bleak. The hardest time psychologically to hold on to your investments is when they are down, and that is absolutely true.
And, you know, it continues, even the best investments do go through downsides, and that's the worst possible time to sell. It's the old fear and greed syndrome is people, as investments go down, they become fearful, and they oftentimes will sell at the worst possible time. And as markets are going up, they'll watch it go up, 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 and up until it reaches a comfortable point for them to buy in, and they're buying high and selling low. And that's just not right.
Investing is counterintuitive. You do want to buy low and you do want to sell high. That's how you make a profit. But for whatever reason, because of emotions, when things are going well, that's when everybody wants to buy, and then the market inevitably has a drop, and then everyone wants to sell. That is not how we do investing. Don't expect to beat the market. This ties in nicely to our active versus passive management discussion.
Certainly does.
I'm sure I will get several emails from friends of mine that are investment managers, and they are paid to beat the market. But I, over the 20 years that I have been doing this, have become more and more of what we call a passive manager and manage the allocation. But there are some people who have a skill and do well. But as a individual investor and so forth, don't expect to beat the market. And that will get you chasing returns. That'll get you churning accounts. It just bad things come from that.
Well, you have to always consider not only the individual issue, particularly if you're talking about stocks, but the ramifications of the costs of training, ramifications of the tax implications, because if you're doing it in less than a 12-month period, you're going to be looking at short-term gains versus long-term gains, which can have a major impact on your taxes. So, you can't expect to beat the market. If occasionally you do, great. But
pat yourself on the back and move on.
Yeah, move on to the next one. But I like the fact that they, there are certain investments that you may expect to do better if you have the time and the stamina to deal with those. And of course, real estate is one of them. A lot of money can be made in real estate. A lot of money can be lost. As my brother used to say, it's location, location, location. If you can buy the right property at the right price at the right time and turn it around, you'll make a lot of money on it. The other aspect is small business. Most of the multimillionaires in the country today started out in and continue to run businesses. Some are small, some are not so small anymore. But if you have aspirations of gathering great wealth, which goes back to point 20, after you've considered your personal life and your health and that of your family, then operating a small business is great if you're willing to pay the dues.
And a lot in taxes.
And a lot in taxes as you go. Although we can't help with that. A nice retirement plan can minimize the taxes in that case, because we spoke to an advisor not that many months ago about saving money for a court reporter who has a lot of income, very little expense, once they buy their machine and, put some tape in it and whatnot. So they were paying a significant amount in taxes, didn't realize that they could do a single K, a 401K plan for an individual. And because they were over 50, they could have deferred $24,000 of their income. They could have put away another 25% of their net Schedule C income if they were a sole prop filer. And therefore, I showed them they could save upwards of $50,000. Yes, I did say $50,000 in taxes from what they would otherwise pay. So there are ways of minimizing the tax impact, particularly on small business, if you know how to do it. And that's why we are here. If you have questions, be happy to share that information with you to take back to your accountant or your financial advisor or whoever. It's not difficult if you know how to do it. So real estate, small business ownership, and the market are really the three basic ways that you can gain wealth throughout your lifetime, putting it into a CD or a money market, whether it's at the bank or the credit union or anywhere else, is not going to get you where you need to be.
Done with the segue?
I stand pat. Yeah.
Tangent. All right. We're back.
We're back.
Okay.
And now we're back.
Number 13. We have talked about
my
this.
My favorite number.
Where possible, minimize fees. We talked about this last week in the active versus passive. Control what you can. You do have control over the amount of fees that you pay. If you don't like or agree with the amount of fees that you're paying, find someone else that can or can lower your fees for you. If you are a business owner and you have a 401k, have a plan benchmark analysis completed for you. Make sure you're getting several different providers. You're getting industry averages in that analysis. That is a way that you can determine, am I paying too much in fees? And if you are a business owner and you do offer a 401k plan to your employees, you're going to be held to one of the highest standards in legal terms, and that is the fiduciary standard. So make sure you have that analysis completed. Any other comments on that?
Fees are one of the more misunderstood.
You'll never get Larry to say, no, I don't have a comment or opinion on something.
That is correct, John.
Let me give you my opinion.
That is correct. You ask, I'll tell. Fees are one of the more misunderstood aspects of our industry, whether you're talking about individual investing, whether you're talking about 401k investing or anything in between, because the general public has no clue how financial advisors are paid. They have no clue what is reasonable, what is unreasonable. And with the new fiduciary rule, the government has, if not directly, indirectly said that you're better off paying a fee on an ongoing basis for services rendered. So it's kind of the model like, a lawyer who is on retention or, an accountant who charges a retention fee. So you pay a fee on an ongoing basis, and hopefully the results are there to support it. But there are other ways of you can choose to pay those fees if you understand what they are. And in a 401k plan, again, we find many investors, there was a major company, won't say the name, they're in St. Louis, so it narrows it down, but major company who went through over the last year and had to significantly change how they were providing investments for all retirement plans because under the fiduciary rule, the method in which they were using to provide those investments was charging, again, under the rule, excessive fees. And I think everyone's seen the lawsuits, the settlements, class actions that have been based on how much are you paying in fees. So make sure you understand what fees you're paying, how they are paid, when they are paid, and are they reasonable? Because paying somebody a 2% management fee to manage your portfolio, in our opinion, I'll speak for John this time, as well as myself, is out of line.
I agree.
Thank you.
Okay. Number 12, consider the value of your time and your investing skills as far as if you're going to manage your own portfolio or you're going to do it with stocks, do you have time to do that kind of research? You're going to do it with mutual funds? Do you have that kind of time to do the research? And as you were just alluding to, real estate and running a small business are considered the most time-intensive investments. But again, I mean, if you're just going to pick some indexes and go on with that, that's great. Make sure it's the right mix. But don't get yourself caught in a trap where you're trying to to manage your money and the things that you're doing are above your capacity. And I don't mean just mental capacity, but time. I mean, it takes a lot of time to do research and determine which investments you're going to use in a portfolio.
Well, and the advent of the mutual fund really was allowing the, at that point, the typical investor to invest in a lot of stocks without having to do the research and the background and whatnot to, you know, if you have a large cap fund, you're going to have a lot of large companies, but you're not going to have to do the research on the individual companies because you're paying a fund manager to do that on your behalf. And believe me, they have a lot more resources and time than I do or John does or anyone else has to be able to do that on your own. So mutual funds have certainly addressed that. Exchange-traded funds, you know, as we've covered in earlier shows, are another method of diversifying your risk within the portfolio because picking individual stocks is tough. And probably goes back to, you know, hanging the dartboard on the wall and throwing some darts and deciding that way which one you're going to invest in because you really don't know. There's so many outside factors that come into play. Certainly pharmaceutical companies, as a rule, I would say are going to do well as the aging population, you know, 10,000 baby boomers turn age 65 every day and will for another 5 to 10 years. So they're going to be taking a lot more pharmaceuticals, but the other day, one of the major pharmaceutical companies was banking, literally, on the approval by the FDA of a particular drug for treatment, and was declined. And their stock took about a 3% hit overnight, literally. So if you have, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars in that particular stock, it's going to cost. You know, will it come back? Probably. Or they'll get acquired by somebody. But it's difficult to pick the individual stocks.
Absolutely. Keep an eye on taxes. We have talked about that. Now, if your money is in an IRA, a Roth IRA, or 401k, you don't necessarily have to worry about taxes right now. Your money will grow in the account on a tax-deferred basis. Larry and I have always touted that you should have a mix of traditional IRA money and Roth IRA money. The Roth, you contribute to the account with after-tax dollars. It grows tax-deferred, and then when you take the money out, you don't have to worry about taxes because you don't pay them. But with the traditional, you get the tax break today, and then down the road, you will have to pay taxes on that money when you take the distribution. So we always say have a mix because we don't know what's going to happen with tax rates. Everyone says you'll be in a lower tax bracket when you retire. I've always argued that
I hope not.
I was going to say you don't want to retire poor.
Let's
kind of take that little myth out of it. You don't want to retire poor. Now, granted, you may not have as much taxable income, but if we are in a situation where I think we could be somewhere down the road that tax rates will have to come back up if it does get lowered, you may be in a different tax situation. So since we don't know, I always like hedging my bets, and you have a mix of Roth and traditional or qualified money. Do your homework before you invest.
I don't get to comment on taxes?
No. How much
time?
But
I want to comment on taxes.
How much time we have left before you say it?
27 minutes.
All right, you can comment on taxes.
Okay, thank you, John. Oh, taxes, one of my favorite topics.
See, I just wanted to make sure we had at least 20 minutes so that we have 7 minutes to get through the other 10 items.
Tried to get past me on that one, but it's not going to work. I'm going to get my time. Taxes, near and dear to my heart. My belief is that you take advantage of every opportunity to save on taxes. If they're going to write it into the law and the opportunity presents itself, I'm going to take it. So whether you're starting with your contribution to your 401k plan, your 403b, make sure you're maximizing that. Make sure that if you have additional investments, certainly you can do a Roth. But look at the impact of taxes from a real estate standpoint. There are ways of selling and buying properties where you don't have a taxable event. You can use a 1031 exchange, which are more advanced planning methods of trading property, basically, without triggering the taxable event. You have to look at the HSA accounts. I knew I was going to get that in here somewhere. There was a newscaster on one of
waiting all show to
one of well, I would try to get in last show, but I didn't have the opportunity. There was a newscaster who made a statement a week or so ago, which I will take issue with, and they were talking about this new type of investment in a HSA account, which is a health savings account. Well, number one, they're not new. They've been around for a number of years. They're a wonderful opportunity to put away money for retirement. The limit last year in 2016 was, I believe, $3,750 plus a $1,000 catch-up. So, you know, I can put away $4,350 for myself and another $4,350 for my wife, which is actually tax-deductible today. It accumulates tax-free if used for health care. And that was all basically true that the newscaster was sharing. But then he said, when you reach age 65, you can use the money for anything you want. That is not true. You can use the money and maintain the tax-free status if it's used for medical expenses. Anything the IRS code allows you to use as a medical expense. But if you take the money out and buy a car, you're going to pay federal and state tax on it. So don't get the idea when you turn 65, money you put into an HSA can then magically be used for anything without paying federal and state tax on it, because that is just not the case. And I'm sure it was an oversight. It probably wasn't in the teleprompter material he was reading. And maybe it was, so somebody who was fact-checking didn't get their facts checked in time.
Fake news!
But be careful about taxes, because they can take a big bite, especially at the end of the year. And if your accountant is one that is a historian, and they like to take your information and plug it in as they may to their software to do tax filing, and then you get a big surprise at the end of the year, I would think about finding someone who is not so much a historian as they are a tax planner, because it takes tax planning to avoid the big surprise at the end of the year. So just my, that's worth more than 2 cents. That's worth at least a nickel, John.
Oh, well, I'm glad you think so.
Yeah.
I believe the quickest way to double your money is to fold it in half. Crickets. That's what I expected. Number 10. We just did number 10. Number 9. Allocate your assets. Yes, we want to make sure we diversify our portfolio. That gets back to the don't put all your eggs in one basket. Make sure you have the right mix of cash, stocks, and bonds. The easiest way to make sure that you have the right mix is twofold. Fill out a risk questionnaire. Talk with your advisor. Make sure both of you have a good understanding what your risk appetite is, how much volatility can you handle without losing your mind. And then the quantitative side of it is to have a plan done. With that plan, you will then be able to back into what your asset allocation needs to be today, what it needs to be in retirement to meet your goals and objectives with a reasonable amount of, reasonable probability of success. How's that?
A reasonable probability of success. Yeah, allocation, as we talked about in the last show and many other shows, is attributable to over 90% of the results that you have. So, you know, make sure you are divvied up. And if you include your real estate, your value of your small business, that you are allocated appropriately for your risk tolerance. That's about all I can say about that.
Really?
For now.
For now. It's not taxes.
That's true.
Ignore the minutiae. I like that word.
It is a good word. Yep.
Don't feel mystified by or feel the need to follow the short-term gyrations of the financial markets. Ultimately, the prices of stocks, bonds, and other financial instruments are determined by supply and demand, which are influenced by thousands of external issues and millions of investors' expectations and fears. I could not sum that up any better.
That pretty much says it all.
There is so much that is out there, so much information, so much misinformation and so forth. Folks, don't worry about it. If you have a financial plan, you know how your asset allocate, your portfolio has to be allocated. You have everything laid out for you. You don't have to worry about the day-to-day. And that's all I have to say about that. Let your financial advisor worry about the day-to-day
stuff. Let the day-to-day take care of itself. Just have a plan.
Number seven, look at the big picture first. Understand your overall financial situation and how wise investments fit within it. I'm having problems today. I need to go back to bed. Before you invest, examining your debt obligations, tax situation, ability to fund retirement accounts, insurance obligations. Speaking of debt, if you're trying to determine, should I save or should I pay my debt? If the interest rate on your debt is 20%, pay the debt. Okay, you're not going to get an investment that's going to, on an after-tax basis, beat 20%. Get that sucker paid off, then come back and start doing some investing. If your interest rate on your debt is 3%, maybe it's worth, you know, keeping the debt, making sure you make the timely payments, and then investing whatever cash you may have left over, because you should, on an after-tax basis, be able to beat 3%.
We would hope, anyway. And there's a psychological aspect, and I have to admit, I do have some clients who, contrary to my counsel, have been more comfortable in through their affluence and their income in paying off their house, paying off other debt. Certainly college debt is something that needs to be paid off. But as far as your home, as far as an occasional car, especially if you're not trading it every 2 or 3 years, you know, it's more like 10 or 15 years, as John and I both do, then, yeah, fine. You know, you can take on that debt and pay it off and then keep the car another 5 to 10 years to maximize your value. But a house is something I'm adamant is not necessary to pay off early. You know, as John said, unless, you know, you're still one of those who unfortunately have an 8 or 10% rate on your mortgage, but I don't know who that is, because everything's been refinanced so many times that if it's not in the threes, you missed the boat on something. So put money away. Make sure you're funding your requirements. Look at the long term, all the things relating to the big picture, because concentrating on one thing only may get you a result on that one thing, but you're going to miss a whole lot of others.
Number six ties into number nine. Diversification is a powerful investment concept that helps you to reduce the risk of holding more aggressive investments. Diversifying simply means that you should hold a variety of investments that don't move in tandem. What that relates to is our little discussion on correlation coefficient last week. In tandem in different market environments. For example, if you invest in stocks, invest worldwide, not just in the U.S. market. However, if you are going to pick just one market, I would probably choose the U.S. market, because if the U.S. sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. You can further diversify by investing in real estate. So what you want to do is, again, don't have all your eggs in one basket. So you want to diversify. So you want to have some bonds and cash. They tend to work in opposite direction of stocks. Real estate, kind of an inflationary hedge, though in the 20 years that I have been doing this and I've been running efficient frontier models, you can see that the world is globalizing, if you will, whereas the correlation coefficients have become much more in line with each other in the different sectors. Real estate is more in line with the stock market and so forth. But there's enough of a difference there that you want to have diversification across the different asset categories. Typically for our clients, we have cash. We usually have 3 to 5 different types of bonds. We'll have the domestic stocks, the U.S., large, mid, and small. We'll have some international, depending on the client's age. We may even have some emerging markets. And then we'll have some what we call the inflationary heads, which could be real estate, gold, precious metal, energy, water. We also have some utilities. So there, you know, creates a well-diversified portfolio, And the reason you're doing that is not to get rich quick, but it's to protect your portfolio and give you the best opportunity for growth.
I agree.
All right. Match the time frame to the investment. Two words, financial plan.
Mm-hmm. Have a financial plan. That was my trigger, right? Have a good,
that was my lead in for the segue. Back to you.
A good, solid financial plan.
Back to you, Larry.
Has to be in writing. Has to have specific time frames that are reasonable, specific objectives that are reasonable. It has to be in writing, has to be implemented and monitored. So if you take the simple five steps, you're going to have success over 90% of the time in reaching your financial goals. So many of my clients, the hardest thing is deciding what are those goals. I mean, retirement is an obvious one. If they have young children, college might be one of those. If you know they haven't reached the time of purchasing a house, which of course is changing a little bit now because they're going back to, as I recall, the 80s and the 70s when you know you didn't buy a house without having 20% down, which is not necessarily a bad thing because you accumulated. That was a goal. You put the money away for your down payment, and when you bought the house, you put your money down and didn't have to worry about PMI. I don't even know PMI existed back then. And, you know, you were in much better financial shape over the long term. So it is about matching the time frame to the investment. You know, you can't buy stocks with money that you're going to need to spend for college next year because you may be surprised when it comes to pay the bill.
Exactly. I always use the example, your retirement for someone who's young is 30 years away. But if you're thinking about if you were going to buy a boat in 5 years, you're not going to invest the same way that you're going to invest for something that you want 30 years from now versus five, because let's say 2 years in, you're doing a good job saving for whatever, you know, the boat that you're going to buy in 5 years. Year three, the market goes down 50%. If you are in all stocks, all of a sudden your 5-year plan for your boat now becomes 7 or 8 years. You're going to invest differently. You're going to have a little bit more in capital preservation to soften the blow. So that is what we talk about when we say match the time frame to the investment. Think long term. Number four, this kind of encapsulates everything that we've talked about so far. But if you are in your 20s, 30s, 40s, retirement is 20, 30, 40 years away. And then hopefully you have a nice, long, healthy retirement, which could be another 20 years. So you're talking about potentially 40 to 60 years. You need to have that long-term perspective with your investments. If year two the market goes down, you realize that you have 38 to 58 years to recover. Then you need, it's hard to do. Believe me, it's hard. When the market's down, it's hard to look at your statement going, oh, this is great. But
buy more.
Yeah, everything's on Blue Light Special because the stocks are down. They're on sale. And realize that, you know, there isn't a 20-year period that the stock market has brought back a negative return.
I don't know that there's a 10-year period that the stock market has at least broken even or been positive. So
for the longest time, we couldn't say 10 years, but the I think it was 2000 through 2009 was slightly negative.
Slightly. Break even.
So we can't. So you can say 15 years and be safe.
And over that period, there were a lot of opportunities to make a lot of money, just depending on, and it goes back to the clients who still will come in and we have a well-diversified asset allocation, and they're like, well, I only made whatever, pick a number, 4%, 5%, 6%. And the market, whatever the market is, you know, did, according to the media, you know, did 12% over that time period. How come I didn't do 12%? So it takes us back into very number of the things we're just talking about here. Risk tolerance, managing expectations, knowing that you are invested properly over that particular point in time, and thinking long term. You know, I'm not going to go buy real estate today trying to sell it in 2 years and make a lot of money on it. But I might buy it and hold it for 5 years or 10 years or longer, and then it will appreciate significantly over a period of time and make that type of investment worthwhile. So Think long term, John.
Absolutely. This is an important one. Nice little segue there. Be realistic about expected returns. If you have a financial plan completed and the required rate of return on your plan is 15%, you need to sit back down and reevaluate that plan because 15% is not reasonable. You would have to take on way too much risk, and there'd be more likelihood that you will not meet your goals and objectives because that's just not a reasonable expectation. Even here in the article, they say 9 to 10%. I'm still uncomfortable with that.
Seems a little high.
I think 8%, you know, for
7-8%.
And then when you're in retirement, 5 to 6% because it's a different type of portfolio. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty straightforward.
That takes me back to the days, John.
Oh, boy.
Of what happened to many of the individuals. I did not have any clients in that situation, fortunately, because I didn't do it, who bought universal life policies back in the 80s. And the policies at that point were showing an internal rate of return of the general asset in the 12 to 15% range. And people would buy $1 million universal life policy, and you know maybe it's $1,000 a year premium. And if you assumed they continued to do 12 to 15%, then the policy made lots of money and covered the cost of insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, until it didn't. And many of those policies, as the technical term we use in the industry, many of those policies blew up, because the interest rates went from 12 to 15% down to 8 or 7 or 6, and they no longer could sustain the cost of the insurance. Therefore, the agent, many times a different agent than this whole the policy, went back to the individual and said, oh, by the way, if you want to keep the insurance for your estate or whatever purpose, then instead of paying $1,000 a year, it's going to be $4,000 a year. And many of those policies ended up being terminated because of bad information, making assumptions that were not realistic. And that's what happens when you, you know, shoot for the moon. It's a lot easier to miss than it is to hit it.
Know the three best wealth-building investments. That would be stocks, real estate, and small business.
Yeah, that about covers it.
Okay. The last one, saving is a
I didn't say I was done with that one, but that about covers it.
I didn't have taxes in there, so I thought you were good.
Well, taxes is the result of owning, you know, and knowing and
all
owning stocks, real estate, and small businesses. But if you really, someone came out of school with you know, whatever degree, it doesn't matter what the degree is, in my opinion, in many cases, unless you're in a real specialized field, and you wanted to lead a long-term successful life, you're going to do all three. You know, you're going to become a small business owner, believe it or not, because as an entrepreneur, you have the opportunity of making significant income and building wealth. You're probably going to buy some real estate because, again, long-term, it's not a bad investment. And you're going to have the investment in the 401k, IRA, whatever, so you can put that money away for retirement. So you're going to have stocks, you're going to have real estate, and you're probably going to own a small business at some point in time if you're going to reach independence, if you will, financial independence, and be able to you know, make the decisions and do what you want to do regardless. Okay, I'm done.
I agree. And the last one is a nice way to wrap this up. Saving is a prerequisite to investing. Unless you have wealthy, benevolent relatives living within your means and saving money are prerequisites to investing and building wealth. Absolutely.
Imagine that.
You know, our broker-dealer is Nickel Investor Corp. Kevin Nickel is the owner of that. And at his seminars, he has a little card, and it says how to get rich, and you turn it over, and it says go to work. It's a process. This does not happen overnight. If you really have that mentality, then, you know, you got a 50-50 shot, take what you got, put it on black, and hope for the best. But if you want to build wealth every time, you want to have a decent retirement, and you want to accomplish accomplish this with reasonable probabilities. It's a matter of working, saving what you can, having a financial plan done, and sticking to that financial plan. It does not get any simpler than that, and it doesn't get any more difficult than that, because it requires patience, it requires hard work, and it takes time. And unfortunately, the society that we live in right now does not promote any of those values.
They don't, John. And one of the things, sitting here on the beautiful campus of Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville, at WSIE-FM, The Sound, 88.7, I talk to a lot of student groups, the public relations society on campus, to marketing groups, to alums who are seniors and about to graduate, and talk about the future of life and what they can expect and what they should do. And saving is a
stay in school.
Stay.
It's brutal out here.
Only if mom and dad are paying for it. Yeah, don't run up that college debt any more than you have to.
Oh, gosh.
But the prerequisite to investing is saving. They have to be and should be at that point cognizant of their financial score. You know, what type of number do they have currently? Do they have any credit rating at all? Because they're going to need that to get a car, to get an apartment, to do whatever happens to be. And, you know, certainly something they should have attended to before being a senior. They need to start putting basic money away. They need to understand that if they're making, it doesn't matter, if they're making $20 an hour and they're working 40 hours a week and they're like, oh, I'm going to have $800 to spend. Well, not really, because at that point you're going to be paying FICA, which currently is the 4.25%.
He's back on taxes, folks.
I'm sorry. But, you know, there's going to be FICA taken out. There's going to be Medicare taken out. You're going to have a deduction for federal tax, state tax. You may have a deduction for your health care and other things. So all of a sudden that $800, you can figure, is going to be at least 20% less. So, you know, knocking $160 off of it. And all of a sudden now you're spending, you know, a lot less money than you thought you had in the beginning. You know, $640 doesn't go nearly as far as $800. So you have to understand these things. You have to start putting money away for investing. I love the college grad who's gotten their first job, and one of the first things is they want to know what they can do to save for retirement. If they don't have a retirement plan, good for them. Let's do an IRA. Let's get things rolling. And that's the way you're going to become successful long term. So we're down to a couple of minutes. Want to thank the Chef Shop for underwriting the program. Obviously, a good cup of coffee starts every day out right, and that assumes that it's not too hot, that you burn your mouth when you drink it, as I did yesterday. So that's the first time in my life that's ever.
If I could figure out how to IV this into me.
Ever happened, John, but it was no fun at all. But thanks to Nancy, thanks to Scott for underwriting the show, for helping us out. Go in there, check out the popcorn, the fudge, the coffee, certainly. They have so many different varietals of coffee in there.
Varietals?
Varietals. It's a varietal coffee. And they have lots of gadgets, so Mother's Day's coming up. Mom would appreciate darn near anything that they have in there. And keep the receipt. They'll give you a gift receipt if you want. If Mom doesn't like what you got her, she can go get something else. But go in, take a look. The shop is all set for spring. It's busting at the seams, literally. They do have the celebration of their 20th year in business coming up the end of this end of May, actually. So we'll be talking a little bit more about that as we proceed. And we do have another potential underwriter, Steve Jankowski, who's the station manager, mentioned to me yesterday that one of our listeners, hope you're out there listening today. Thank you very much for taking interest. I'll be giving you a call, and we'll talk about an underwriting opportunity for you, too. Otherwise, go by and visit the Chef Shop, 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois, 62025, phone number 618-659-9840. Always feel free to contact John at jgraneynickelfinancial.com or Larry at lexonickelfinancial.com. And you can check out our past blogs of the shows at www.thefinancialcafe.us. So I think we're getting close to being there, John. So say goodbye, John.
Goodbye, John.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.